Hey there, everyone. Welcome back to Let's Be Real. I'm Nicole. I'm so glad for this moment that we get to share together. And I'm really excited to get us into today's episode where I will be interviewing my new friend, Erin Eddy. Erin is the founder of So Worth Loving. She has written a book by the same name. And she's the co-host of a podcast called God Hears Her, which is awesome. And with another friend and mentor of mine, Elisa Morgan. So super great. If you haven't checked it out, definitely do so. But before we get into the interview, just wanted to give you guys a couple of updates from my end. It is finally springtime. It feels like it's coming. I feel like we're lifting into a new season, which I'm so totally grateful for. And it also means we're coming into book launch season. My next book is coming out May 18th. It's called The Miracle Moment. Guys, it is like the book that I've been wanting to write. That's just a staple on healthy relationships. It's like a go-to handbook on how do I do these relationships in my life, in my family, in my romantic relationships, in my work relationships. How do I actually transform the relationships I have to the relationships that I want? So cannot wait to share lots more with you, but wanted to give you the heads up that we're going to be picking our launch team to kind of get the pre-release book and be in a special community with me as we get ready to launch. And that's going to happen around March 15th. So if you're not on my email list, today is the day. If you hate the stuff I send you, you can unsubscribe. That's fine with me. But I think you'll like it. So come over to NicoleEunice.com and you'll be able to sign up for our newsletter. That is our first pick on book launch team. So make sure you jump over there and get connected. I cannot wait for this season coming up. And without further ado, I hope you enjoy this conversation between me and Erin Eddy of So Worth Loving. Hey everyone, welcome to the Let's Be Real podcast. I'm your host, Nicole Eunice, and I believe we need all the help we can get when it comes to living a full and free life. Here you'll find honest truth, practical tips, and perspective changes that help you embrace the miracle that is your life. It's an in-process conversation that's going to be unfiltered, and it better be fun. Let's get real together.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to a very, very fun conversation that I've been looking forward to for a long time with my friend, Erin Eddy. We're new friends.
Yay!
We're Zoom friends in the era of COVID. I never thought I could be real friends with someone that I only know over Zoom, but I feel different.
I feel different now. I'm changing my perspective.
I would love to ask, wouldn't it be fun to know, hey, how many people have found a new relationship or friendship since COVID? I don't know if that's normal or not. I know at the church that I work in Richmond, they had an all virtual discipleship track for all of COVID.
Wow.
And someone, just a woman just came into the office just a moment ago and was like, that thing, my virtual group sustained me for this entire COVID experience. She works in a hospital, has really limited her contact. And I just was like, I have really changed my mind about online experiences. How about you, Erin? Have you ever been in the online dating world? Did you ever enter into that world?
Oh, goodness gracious.
Just a starting point.
Nice icebreaker. Oh, my goodness. I did. I did. And then there's no shame for anybody that's listening that did do it.
Absolutely.
I couldn't do it. I did it for 24 hours. I did Bumble for 24 hours.
Okay.
But I went on at a low point of my life. So it wasn't I was healthily just going on Bumble. It was an unhealthy reason why I was on Bumble. But
gotcha.
I have some relationship with online dating apps. But I will say to your friend that experienced that discipleship group, I went into a women's spiritual formation group this last year. Mm. And it was with Alicia Britt Scholey. And
I love her. I talk about her all the time.
She's amazing. She's one of my mentors and just a good friend. And she's
fantastic.
She's just a well of wisdom. She just breathes it. But there were 14 women that we got to go through our one-on-ones with her this last year. And that did help just change me. I mean, we prayed over each other in the beginning of the year, at the end of the year, and then in our groups. And It was amazing. And I never thought, I was never like when I learned that I, because I, when I signed up for this group, Nicole, I thought that I was signing up for just the one-on-one. I didn't know I was going to be doing it with like a group of women. So I think that God was
You're like, never mind. I just want to be friends with Alicia.
Yeah. And then I get an email.
I'm just saying it for all the people out there who've ever thought that. I just want to say it because I run groups all the time. And I often feel like people are in there like, we'll see.
That's
you
right.
know,
it's
I get
so
it.
True. I was like, when I got the email, you know, from her that, you know, the women, like all the women, 14 women, I was like, whoa. Huh? I signed up for a 14 women like group. What? But I think that was God's sweetness on my life because I think he was like, you're about to enter into a pandemic and you're going to be alone. So I'm single too. And I live by myself and I have plants. Yeah. So it's like all that was keeping me company during COVID times.
Oh my goodness. All right. Speaking of Erin, I obviously we're just jumping into this conversation as if we're all sitting around the table having coffee or wine or whatever and getting to know each other. But let me back up for those of our listeners who don't know who you are, Erin, why don't you tell us a little bit about your life? Like if you had to be at a really awkward, like dating, like mixer since we started there, like what is it that you would say about who you are and what you're about?
Oh, I definitely probably wouldn't tell them anything that I do. My name's Erin. I live in Georgia. I live in South Georgia. I grew up in North Georgia, country girl.
Okay.
I'm trying to think what else would I tell them? I got like nervous about speed dating. I don't have an elevator pitch. I own a lifestyle company called So Worth Loving. It's a lifestyle clothing brand. I've had that for 10 years. And I say I accidentally started a business because I really did accidentally start it. It was a passion project of mine. And then in the journey of owning So Worth Loving, I was just open to, or I guess I was exposed to a community of people that wanted to share their story of why they felt unworthy of love and wanted to feel less alone in their struggles. And so I've observed that for 10 years. And then in my own personal just struggles with identity and self-worth and where it's found, I hit a rock bottom and a burnout season of my life back in 2016. Mm. And then that just kind of, that in 2016, I went through deconstructing and reconstructing my perspective with the Lord on what self-worth is. So that's like a little synopsis, I guess, of who I am and what I do right now is primarily So Worth Loving. And I do a little bit of art direction too. I love to help brands tell their stories because I love to be a part of storytelling. So
it's fantastic. And Erin has just released a book in January. Yay! Yeah. Her first book, baby, called So Worth Loving. Yeah. Which really is, I think, probably the culmination of all of the things that you've been learning and that God has worked out in you. Isn't that interesting how in wherever anyone listening is in their faith journey, you know, we share this perspective that God is inviting us to author our life with him. And I'm so intrigued by the fact that you started a lifestyle brand around the idea of self-worth before you went through what you're telling us is this total, like kind of, I would call it maybe a death and resurrection of your own identity.
Yes.
Is that, yeah.
You hit the nail on the head. Absolutely. Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's wild. You know, and I think one of my friends, I write this in the book, one of my friends shared with me, you know, I think So Worth Loving was a place of refuge for you because you so badly wanted to believe that you were worthy of love. That it's sometimes easier. And what I've learned is just it's easier to tell somebody else that they're worthy of love, that they have purpose, that they're going to get through it, that this is a hard season. You're going to be refined by the fire. You know, you hear all of these things. It's so much easier to tell a friend that than to believe it for yourself. And I think that was what I was going through. I truly wanted to understand what this self-worth, what does that even mean? Like, what does God think about me? Does he think about me? Can he hear me? Is he sometimes in, sometimes out? You know, like I wanted so badly to understand it more. And I think if it wasn't for the death of maybe my, the death of my old self and a resurrection of my new self, I think I'd still be on this constant wondering and just going down a road that was deteriorating more of my sense of self-worth because I was finding it in other things that we naturally do. Like whether it's attention or it's a relationship that we're in and we're super needy for affirmation from that person, or our finances and what our profit and loss statements look like, or because these are just all the things that I was finding my sense of self-worth and reputation, status. I mean, how many of us really want to get like our Delta status to being something great so we can go into Delta?
I do. Right? I do. I'm not ashamed to admit it. I mean, I have found a lot of life in that identity, but I realize obviously that that's not going to actually bring me life. But yeah, I mean, we're so tempted by all of these different opportunities to hook ourselves in. And I think a lot of times don't even know. So I want to circle back, Erin, to something that you said a second ago, and then talk a little bit about some of the topics that you cover in your book. You said that you were one of your friends said, yeah, maybe you found refuge in these language. And I think when I work with clients, one thing as we're working on like purpose is that I do encourage people to listen to what they're passionate about talking about, or the way that they affirm or encourage people, because a lot of times it is a projection. It is like something that we are needing that affirmation for in ourselves. So tell us a little bit. We actually talked about this in Let's Be Real when you were on with Elisa, which was super fun, but I'd love to circle back to where, as you did that deconstructing and went through that hard season, will you tell us a little bit more about that and what you discovered in that season? About places more specifically that you were had lies that you were believing or whatever it is that kind of took you down that road.
Yes. Yeah. Goodness. Yeah. I do think that for me, I had to go through a personal reckoning. Like everything kind of imploded in my life, but it didn't suddenly happen. And I think sometimes we think suddenly on the outside, we're like, how did that suddenly happen? But it was a slow drip for me. It was like a slow drip of lies that I had started to believe about myself when I was 7, you know, that I just never paid attention to until, you know, you're put to this fire or this boiling point and it's just bubbles over. And so for me personally, I went through a divorce, and when I went through that divorce, I mean, it's a death. So it's a split of community. It's a loss of, or it's a death of community. It's a loss of, you know, what you thought the future was going to be. It's a loss of what you thought your past was. It's a loss of, you know, you don't know what your present is, if you'll ever, it's like a tidal wave. Like you're almost, it's like swirling around in a tidal wave. And so I was just swirling around in this tidal wave during this divorce, and I went through so much like lack of trust in community, a lot of judgment from people in the church. And that was probably the most painful part of all of it, was losing my community and feeling betrayed by people that identified with the Lord. And I thought, since they identify with him and they are saying these things about me, then God must say these things about me. So it just reinforced lies about myself when I was 7. So it's just, I was on this swirling tidal wave of just making poor choices. You know, they say desperate people do desperate things. I was desperate to be loved and felt and seen, and divorce makes you feel loveless. It makes you feel, does not make you feel seen. In fact, if it makes you feel seen, it makes you feel seen for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
And so I just started believing lies around me, and I started defying God. Like I was just like so angry at him though. My defiance with the Lord was, it was out of pure anger towards him. And I didn't think that I was allowed to feel angry, like that he could want to hear my anger. So I just dealt with it on my own and decided, you know what? I tried your way, Lord. I did all the good Christian girl things. I'm in this divorce. I'm going to go do me. I'm going to go do some other things. And that's what I ended up doing.
Talk to me a little bit. Yeah. Erin, I don't know how long were you in that relationship? Like, was that sort of a young adult, like you followed the Christian, you know, for those of you guys who did not grow up in the Christian faith or in the South, I would say as a person who didn't grow up in the South, but kind of engaged into this culture, in my young adulthood, I think there is a very powerful narrative around being a Christian girl in the South. You're going to get married. I mean, getting married is like very key to that narrative as I've experienced it. Maybe it's changing, but maybe Erin, when you were in that season and when I was a young adult, I noticed that.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit, is that, were you living into what you thought was the quote unquote right path? Is that where some of that anger came from?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Because I was always I grew up in a Christian household. My parents, growing up in the South with, you know, they were two furniture makers. So they manufactured furniture for 40 years. But my dad's from Ohio and my mom's from Indiana. And my dad has gone through a very rebellious past life. And then my mom grew up very legalistic. So when they got married, they were like, we are not going to be like legalistic, but we want some structure, because my dad had, because of his past. And so it was a cool merge up. So my parents growing up in the church, they've always, my mom and dad always taught me just the Lord just wants to be close in wherever we are at in our life, which I'm so grateful for. Mm-hmm. I chose to, and you know, it's interesting because I look back, I'm like, we never really talked about save yourself for marriage, or I mean, we kind of did, but it was just kind of understood, but it wasn't really a conversation. But I mean, I did all the good Christian girl things, went on mission trips with this church that I grew up at. And I saved myself for marriage. I met my former husband when I was 17, married at 20, a month into 21. And I didn't really know what I wanted to do with my life. I went to high school, didn't go to college, graduated, and was just kind of like, went into ministry, worked for a ministry company or nonprofit. And so I'm married, did all these right things. Shouldn't my marriage be perfect? Because I did, because everything up to this point was performed really well. Like I was all performance-based. And I was with my former husband for 13 years collectively with marriage and then dating. So we were married for 9.5 years before we went through our divorce. So I just, the anger came from, God, I did all these right things and you didn't protect me, guard my heart. I'm find myself here. Where are you? Who are you? I don't think I know who you are. They say you're this, but I'm experiencing this. And that's where I just had so much confusion about God and anger, because it was like, I performed right and this is where I am. And so that is kind of what I was part of the, especially in the South, it is the get married young, have babies. If not, then you have less value. Which is so, I know that breaks God's heart. Like that is not true.
It's also, it's not biblical at all. So, you know, for those who are listening and are like, isn't that what it is though? And I'm we could go so many places, but Erin, as I listen to you describe that, in my mind, I see this picture of like a framework had been unintentionally built that you were like, I'm going to live into this framework and then I'm going to get what I want. And you mentioned it, you subsequently, like you didn't really know when that framework crushed, like who God really was. But I would also say that's what makes us not know who we are either, because we build our life around a framework of who we'll be. Right. And I think So Worth Loving, your book really is about that like framework. Right. And you wrote it kind of in a more creative way around that framework. So tell us a little bit about kind of, why you wrote it, like why, I mean, lots of people have been through hard times and I love to talk about them because there's so much to learn. So what is it though that made that experience like be passionate enough to make it into a book? Because we know like a book is a real labor of love. It truly is. So
it's like a child. It's so true. So I share that the book is like a formal journal. And I also share in the book that if you're wanting like the 10 steps to learning your self-worth or unlocking your inner power, my book's probably not for you, but it's a book on just true, honest conversations and questions as to what it really means to live your life through the lens that you're worthy of love. You know, how discovering your true value changes everything is my byline. It's like, how does that actually change everything? If you know what your true value is, how does that really change it? Discovering it, what does discovering look like? And so I wrote the book in 3 sections, and I did this on purpose because I wanted the book, like with the format, to be a way for somebody that is so exhausted, they're tired, they're drained, they're burned out, they have a lot of questions. Maybe they're skeptical of who God is. Maybe they don't know who God is, or maybe they do know who God is, but it's a version that they don't really like. And so they just avoid intimacy altogether mm-hmm. with him. And I wrote it in the headspace that I was in. So look in is an entire
yeah.
section. There's about 10 chapters or 8 chapters in the first section, but they're like bite sized. So it's like a page or two. So the chapters are, so you always feel like you're accomplishing something. I wanted the person that's tired and burned out to always feel like they are accomplishing something. So if you read 5 chapters that day, that's 5 pages. You accomplished so much.
I love that. And I love what you said, Erin, about like, hey, if you want 10 steps to inner power, like you can in fact find that somewhere else. I'm going to just FYI guys, I don't actually think it works, but yeah. Erin, it sounds to me like you really wrote this out of that place of your own, you've been through like yeah. that, you know, that death and resurrection experience. And you wanted to write to the person who would resonate with like being in that emotional space.
Yes, exactly. I write with, and that was fun, even learning my voice as an author. Cause I never thought I'd write a book cause I'm like, yeah. I'm bad at grammar. Like I ramble. I put so many run on sentences. I make up words. One of my friends, you know, this weekend was like, that's not a word. And I was like, it totally is a word. It was not a word.
So, you're like, it needs to be a word though. Obviously.
It needs to be a word. You know, it's just so funny because I think about the whole time I was writing this book, I was like, Lord, why me? I feel so unqualified. And as leaders, I think sometimes even we can be so confident about a mission, but still feel unqualified in our skill set to do the mission. And
yes.
I just felt so unqualified to do the mission of sharing my journey and my relationship with God and what all the messiness and what that looked like, and being able to package it in a way that is, you know, palatable for somebody that can consume it and understand and meet them where they're at. And I just reminded myself over and over, I'm like, okay, you use David. Okay. Moses had a stutter. Like I just kept telling myself to get through to write this book. But this book, you know, the look in section is all about looking inward and the messiness, the agreements that we've made about ourselves, the lies that we're living out and the discomfort that we feel in our current state and just allowing ourselves to be still in that. And then the look up section is all about a relationship with God. Like if we reveal all this stuff that's in our heart, like all the nasty stuff, like what does he think of us and what does he want to do with it? And does he really love us still after we bear it all? Do we still have purpose? Are we qualified or are we unqualified with him involved after we've kind of looked in? Because for me, my personal journey, before I could get really close into understanding more about how God saw me, I did need to look in at how I saw myself. And by doing that, then I learned, oh, there's a lot of mess that I don't even know how to speak truth into. I need to go to the person, the source of truth.
Talk to me.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Talk to me about that experience. Okay. Cause I find that in my own life and in the life of those that I will coach, it's one thing to have insight. Like it's one thing to be like, okay, yeah, I see you. You mentioned age 7. You talked about that on the last podcast. We'll link it in the show notes. Like making agreements, like being like, oh, I've seen myself as a performer since this age or whatever. Yeah. It's one thing to get insight, but to actually be transformed into believing truth. So talk to us about those low times where you were realizing what you were believing, but how did you get to that place of kind of seeing yourself differently?
Yes. I love talking about this, Nicole, because I think that, yes, you're so right. We can read all of these books and have insight on how we operate and, oh, our Enneagram number does this. And, you know, we have all like Myers-Briggs.
Right,
does this,
right.
It's like,
oh, here's all the ways I messed up. Great. Thank you. Like now I know, but you know, what do I do now?
But like, how do I like live out the truth of what I know? And gosh, that was really hard for me. But you know, what happened to me, I remember one night, I jumped into the dating scene really quickly after my divorce to fill the voids of loneliness. I wanted to be seen, loved, desired. So I just jumped into the dating scene. And then I entered into a semi-serious relationship. And when that relationship ended, I was just heartbroken. And I write in Look In, the section in Look In, about how my baggage just all came flying forward. Mm-hmm. So it was like, I had no choice but to look at all of it and assess it and gain the insight of it. Then I was like looking at my life and thinking about, surely this is not what God has intended for me, to live a life where I feel this way forever. Like, surely I'm made for something more than feeling this way, acting out this way, filling voids. Like, really, is this all that life has to give to me? Like, is this really what it is all about? This is what life is. And so I remember sitting in my, I remember taking a bath and just like floating. I don't know if you've ever, as a little girl, float in the bathtub or like your body submerged and it's just your face poking out, you know? I just remember floating there and just so sad. And I just remember thinking, I just don't want to exist. It wasn't suicide ideation. It was just, I just felt like a burden. Like, I just didn't want to exist anymore. Everything felt so heavy. My thoughts felt so heavy. My choices that I had made felt so heavy. Everything was heavy. And I just remember floating there thinking, how in the world am I going to get out of this? How am I going to climb up this mountain? Because my mountain was, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars of debt. It was a divorce. It was a loss of friends. It was a loss of identity. It was everything I was confused on. Like you mentioned earlier, it was like, I didn't know who I was. And so I'm sitting there and I'm like, how am I going to learn who I am? With everything that I now know about myself. And I just remember asking the Lord, I think what I did with the insight that I knew is that I asked the Lord, I invited him into my anger. And I said, God, I'm angry and I want you to take it. And I want you to show me something out of it. And I felt an undeniable sense of peace that I've never experienced before. And I knew it wasn't of me. I knew it was just the Holy Spirit because I was so stubborn, so jaded, so broken, so heavy that the only way for me to experience any level of peace and clarity would be him. And in that moment, I felt so loved. And so I started to pursue therapy. I started to surround myself with good people. I started looking at the choices that I was making. It was like, you know, I know all this about myself. This is where I want to be. These are the choices I'm making. Is that going to get me to where I want to be? So I started doing a lot of reflection and then just refining my choices and who I'm allowing to speak in. And then observing the people that are speaking into my life. And Nicole, I know you probably see this all the time with just working with so many different personalities. It's the people that you surround yourself with. They are the ones that are going to shape your perspective and how you view yourself and how you make choices and even just how you brainstorm life decisions. And I was just brainstorming with the wrong group of people, but those people made me feel better about myself, but my choices ultimately weren't, the end goal was not a reflection that I wanted, and the choices that I was making with those people, it just revealed so much to me that I need to bring safe people into my life. And so that inviting God in to the, what I've learned and what I know about my life and feeling really heavy met with ownership of, okay, where I'm at, like, this is where I'm at. To reassessing everything. Long-winded answer to tell you those are the 3 to 4 key components for me that kind of helped me to shift and start living that out.
Well, and I love how you said that, because there is a narrative, I think, that exists in stories of sort of loss or death and then resurrection. And they do seem to come to this key point that I've heard from lots of other people. So for any of our listeners out there who are just feeling that burden, there seems to be this like complete, and the word I want to use is abject, even though that seems like the wrong word. There is a complete and desperate surrender moment that I've experienced with people, truly, where it's like, they're like, this will not work anymore. Like, they just give up their own whatever and admit, right? Like, give up and admit where they really are. I'm completely broken. I'm completely angry. I'm whatever. And there's just like this cry that goes out into the universe from your soul. True. And yes. I know people who've like met Jesus at this place. Like I've had an experience of like an actual presence of Jesus kind of experience in places like this where, and what I've felt like I heard in your story, Erin, is like what changed in that moment was that your soul realized that you were actually not alone, because in your most alone time, you had an outside presence express itself, right? Like yes. you knew you were like, I didn't bring this piece from somewhere. This is not my lavender bath bomb. Like I've already tried all these things. Like this is definitely not me, you know? And when you have a one time, I mean, truly, if I could like give everyone the faith to believe that at least one time in your life, the presence of God can be that real to you, regardless. I don't care if you're Buddhist or Hindu or atheist or whatever, like whatever you think you are, that there is a loving heavenly parent who does want you to know that you're not alone. Like it just exists. And that it sounds to me like you went through that complete abandonment, surrendered your own way, like had a moment of presence that then gave you the ability to say, I have to see what's around me. Right. And I love what you've said about friendships, because I think for a lot of us, we think I need friends who are able to help me with my perspective. But what I want to say to people is, guess what? Whoever your friends are, whatever their perspective is, that is shaping you. Even if they're not speaking into your life, like if you don't have that kind of relationship, their mindset, their attitude, their outlook, their choices, that stuff, you are shaping your life around that life. Like, does that make sense? So like, if everyone around you is like super materialistic, I'm just going to give ideas that are within the church even. If you're just surrounded by people who are like really into appearances, super materialistic, generally tend toward more shallow conversation, you will become that. Like even if you think that you can be the deep one or whatever, it's not, it don't work like that. So
that is accurate.
Let's talk a little bit more about friendships, because Erin, you just said a moment where I think that people can get to and feel really lost, which is what I'm doing is not working. This is not the right relationships. Well, how do you find those friendships? Like, what did that look like for you, particularly in this arena of female friendships? Yes. How did you find them when you said this ain't gonna work?
Well, So and even in that moment when I was just like, you know, that just that unbelievable supernatural peace moment, my life didn't change instantly. And I think sometimes we think, all right, so now I'll be debt-free. I'll have a great community. My life will be like this. La, 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 la.
Totally.
None of that changed.
We should tell people like, put down my book for 3 months because nothing's going to work for like 3 months. So if you just read the whole thing or 6 months or whatever, if you read the whole thing all at once, you're like, oh, this is, you know, I always want to be like, hey, there was a long pause between chapter 8 and chapter 9. There's a huge pause. So.
Oh, yes. Yeah, exactly. That's so true, though. In the book, I'm like, okay, so now you're entering into like a battlefield, and the battlefield is really hard. And you're going to relapse in your old way of thinking more than you're going to think about the new way of thinking. Like, you will relapse
in
your negative thoughts, you'll relapse in your agreements. And when you do that and you make choices again, that you're like, I thought I was over that. I had the awareness.
Yeah.
It's like, it is such a battle, and it still is for me. It's like, I still find myself falling. I mean, it's behavioral habits that I have acquired over 34 years. You know, I'm 34, I'm young, and I've got a lot of baggage that I've, you know, lived out. And so, I have to be realistic with that and give myself grace along that journey. And that's just the
real, that's right.
That's just who the Lord is to us. But with friendships, I looked around. So when I was looking at my choices and I was looking at where I wanted to be, like what kind of friend I wanted to be, what kind of people I wanted to surround myself with, were they a loving father and a consistent friend in their community? Did they have a balance of serving others and passion for their job? And, you know, like, what kind of character did they have?
Yeah.
I started looking at character, and I was like, what kind of depth and character do my people like that are currently around me have? And like you said, it's like, if your friends are materialistic, even if you think you're the deep one, if all of them are materialistic, you will eventually feel very, very alone when you go through something hard, because you will impact the way their life looks, which was what journey was. I was surrounded by a lot of materialistic people. And when my life looked like a mess, they wanted nothing to do with me anymore, because it impacted the way that they were viewed as. And so friends, like, it's so important to find people that are honest with their story, honest with their recovery, whatever the recovery looks like. And when I say recovery, I just mean like an awareness and a renewal of their mind and in a season that was hard and changing for them. How do they carry themselves? Were they honest about all the feelings and the ickiness? Those people that are honest will be able to sit with you in your honesty, and they won't judge you because you're being honest. They know how hard it took for you to be really honest. They know how hard it is to sit in the crud and the muck and the mess because they've done it. Those are the types of people I wanted to surround myself with because everybody else just did not feel safe. And so how I found that was really hard. And it wasn't, you know, I wish I could say, you know, I just found this like huge group of people, but it wasn't like a huge group of people. I looked around and I was like, this person I know has the qualities and the character that I desire for myself, but I also admire. So I would just ask them for coffee or let's go get a glass of wine or go, you know, let's go see a movie. I just slowly started like, I didn't want to be the needy, like I'm going to attach myself like a spider monkey. But I just started just wanting to surround myself with that person. And then they have a friend that they invite this time. And so then I was with them. And so then it just kind of evolved and I didn't put a ton of pressure on it. And I allowed, you know, to show myself like what I was going through slowly. I didn't want to word vomit everything. That's what my therapist was for. Fortunately, I was like, because I don't you think sometimes, Nicole, that we will go to a person that we're like, they seem so safe. And then we just word vomit all over them. And then we kind of scare them off.
Well, I agree with that. But I will say one thing, because I have a lot of people who will like talk about their vulnerability remorse because they like were vulnerable. I'm like, what we mean, like I want to say for Aaron and I, if you're listening right now, what we mean by that, this isn't about a night where you spill your heart and you feel a little bit vulnerable from that. We're talking about if it's your night every night, if the reason it becomes, when it becomes uneven is when you are the one who's constantly like, it is your night every night and you're not making space for the other. So I want to encourage people to be like, yeah, like you're going to have nights where maybe, yeah, you're with that one friend who's a new friend. Maybe they're in a more like in a healthier, stable place and that makes you feel safe. So you say a lot. That's fine. You don't have to apologize for that. Just next time, like maybe it's not your time. Like maybe next time you ask more questions and you engage more directly and intentionally with their life. I like to think of it as a tennis match. And in general, we do want to pass the ball back and forth. And a therapist is there for you to never pass the ball back and forth. In fact, your therapist is making you keep the ball, which can be very confusing. Actually, Erin, in my therapist days, when I was in as a therapist for, you know, 8 years of private practice, I started not knowing how to be a good friend anymore because I would pass the ball back all the time.
Oh, I bet.
So I just want to make sure, because I love therapy. I believe in therapy. A lot of our listeners are in therapy. I just want to make sure that you understand that a therapeutic relationship is not a friendship. And what you're experiencing there is important, but they're not your friend. And friends are vulnerable mutually and they pass the ball back and forth.
Yes.
But you may have to like learn how to ask really good questions to draw people out so that they know that even though you're in a hard place, you do care about the hard place that they might be in, or that you do want to pray for them, or you do want to hear about their kids or their life or whatever is going on. So I want to offer that as like a way forward in friendship. If that makes sense.
So I love that you said, if it's your night every night, like then that, like that's so true. And what I love what you said too about, oh goodness, you just said so much gold right there. I just wish it would. I'm so
about
glad we
therapy,
recorded this.
Like,
yes. Because it's
about like therapeutic relationships. Like they feel so great. Like people love their therapist if you have a good one.
Yes.
And in your mind, when you're in therapy, and I know because I'm in therapy, like you see that person as your guide and like this wonderful friend.
Yes.
But they're trained to keep the ball in your court all the time.
Yes.
And that is not what real friendship
exactly.
is.
That's right.
That's what I'm about to say. Yeah.
And it's so easy, I think, too, when you find a friend, especially in that most impressionable time when you are rebuilding and reshaping and reforming your life and it's being renewed. It's really easy to, when you find an actual friend that will listen and will sit with you, sometimes, well, at least what I found was when a friend wasn't wanting to be mutually vulnerable with me, but they wanted to have superiority over me by speaking into me. And it was actually feeding their ego and their savior complex. And I, once I realized that, and I started, like, when I was, my life was thriving, you know, and I was like, I was growing and healing and good things were happening. They couldn't be as happy with me because they were so used to bonding with me over my trauma.
That's right.
And that wasn't a friend either. And I think that that's, it's like your therapist is not your friend. They are made to, like, do that. And then your friend is not your, is not supposed to be your actual friend.
That's right. And like, if you're, if your friendship is built on your crisis.
Yes.
And it's okay to be in a crisis. Like, I've been in seasons where I know that I really have needed more from my friends than my friends needed from me, if that makes sense.
Right.
We have seasons like that. But what you're looking for is what you said, Erin, is there mutual vulnerability? Because even with mentors of mine in the church who are 10 or 15 years older than me, there's a spirit of vulnerability that still is present in those relationships. Like, even though they're 15 years older than me, if I say, like, yeah, how is it? Like, how is it empty nesting? There's vulnerability that comes back. It's not like they deflect and they won't talk about it. And look for that because of Erin. Like, there are folks in our lives and in our world who, and we are those folks sometimes who find their identity out of being needed, but it's actually a cover so that they don't have to be intimate. They don't have to be vulnerable. So yeah, it's just a little red flag you want. And really, Erin, I don't know how many friends you have like this. I feel like if you have one or two friends in your whole lifetime who can be like this, you are blessed.
Yes.
Like, that is amazing. So this does not need to be like your 14 closest friends.
Exactly. That's a, that, exactly. Like, I thought maybe I'll have like, like, you know, I had a large community of people, but it, again, like what I said earlier, it was very driven on materialistic lifestyles. And then I had no friends. And then I was like, I only have two really good friends. What's wrong with me? And then I was like, oh my gosh, that's a blessing to have two really good friends.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. That's another thing no one ever talks about. It's like we never graduated out of like our high school group. Like, we're supposed to always have a high school group. But I'm like, no, like most of those friends in high school, even when I talk to my daughter who's 16 and my son is 18 and we just talk about relationships, even within those groups, if you think back to that season of your life, if you were blessed to have good relationships, you probably were closer to one or two and then like had fun with more. And I think I'm like, can we have a revolution, Erin, where we just say to all of our girlfriends, hey, it's okay to be closer to one or two and have fun with a lot of friends.
Exactly. You know,
it's okay. Like, have fun. It's, you're a good light to them most likely, but they don't need to be your person who's, you know, doing all that stuff. So very good. Oh my gosh. I know there's so much more we could say about the book. Most of what I want to say is obviously if you've enjoyed our conversation, read Erin's book, you're going to feel so cared for. And I know that's kind of like what your, even your reviews as they come in are saying, is that people feel like they have a friend in you. And I know for myself, like as an author, that's always been my greatest hope, is that you feel like I'm your friend on your bedside table. Like, you're not alone. And I know that's what you've accomplished in this book as well, which I love. So I want to bring us kind of up. And before I do that, I want to ask you one more question, which is, what's the one thing that you would want someone to say after, other than the one I just said for you? What's the one thing that you would want someone to say after reading your book? Like, sometimes I love asking that question because it's like, what's your real heart's desire with the work that you've done?
I hope that when somebody reads this book, when they set it down, they just say, I don't feel as alone as I did when I picked it up.
Mm.
And I hope that they feel less crazy in their emotions. Mm-hmm. And I hope that they feel like they can start to unveil their emotions to the Lord and feel equipped to do that just by me, opening up all my mess. I hope that they, I hope that they feel less alone ultimately.
Oh, I love that.
And if that's all somebody gets, is I walked away and I felt less alone and I felt more courage to walk forward. I'm like, yes, That is awesome. What I wanted.
Oh my gosh. I love that. It's such a good word and a great goal. And I know that you've accomplished that through this book. So that's awesome. So as we close, I love to like end with some quick fire questions. Okay. So three quick fire questions for you. Ready? Okay. First, what happens in your life on a typical Tuesday?
Oh, on a Tuesday. Oh man, my life is so boring. What happens? I guess I make a playlist. Sometimes I make a playlist. I make a playlist because I've overcome Monday and I'm like, let's enjoy Tuesday with a good playlist.
Oh my gosh, I love that. Okay, so what is your favorite? Speaking of materialism, which we've denied this entire podcast, but now we're just gonna jump right into it. Tell me about a favorite product in your life right now. Just a favorite thing that you're enjoying.
Oh yeah, I use a shampoo that I love. It's the Davines brand, and I think it's how you pronounce it, and it smells glorious. The thing is so expensive, but that is my guilty pleasure that I put on my hair.
You'd have to actually like send me the words, because what will happen after this podcast is we'll be like, we just opened our hearts and we just really led people to deep places. And I will get like 46 messages about what was the kind of shampoo that Erin likes. So it's in the show notes, everyone. And I led you here. I led us here. So I'm not ashamed. And I love good smelling stuff. So
yeah, I'm talking about
we'll put
shampoo.
It in the show notes. I know. I don't care. I like it. Okay. And tell me about like, what's your favorite, if anything, kind of app or productivity like thing that helps you with organizing your life?
I am so excited you asked me this one. Okay. So I have two I'm going to share. I have Milanote, Milanote. Mm-hmm. And it's if to-do lists, it's like if Asana and Pinterest had a baby.
When you said Asana, I thought you meant like a sauna, like the sauna that you sit in
like when
to
you go,
feel good about yourself. I was like, okay, it's Pinterest meets Asana. For those who don't know, Asana is a productivity software that's like pretty Excel spreadsheet-ish, just not as, you know. It's not as creative.
Very task oriented. Very to-do list.
Tasky. Yes.
Tasky. It's like Trello, or if you're familiar with Trello, or To-Do, or AnyDo, or any of those to-do apps. Milanote is the jam. It is so great, Nicole. So you need to get it. So then, and then I use, there's another thing called X.AI, and it's a scheduling app for like your schedule. So it connects to Google Calendar and iCal. And it like gives you a report for the entire week of what you have to do. And it breaks it down also by day of what you have that day. And it sets you up for success with your calendar.
Oh my gosh. You just told me about two apps that I did not know about, because I am like really into making sure I can be as productive as possible. So thank you for enlightening us with some new opportunities. Can't wait to check them out. And those of you guys who want to connect with Erin, you'll see her. You can find her on Instagram. So Worth Loving is her lifestyle brand, clothing, like just beautiful messaging, all of that stuff that we can surround ourselves with that remind us who we are. And all of that's in the show notes. So we're super excited to get you guys connected to Erin. And Erin, thank you for just the wisdom and heart and just who you are and what you're bringing to the world. I'm so glad to know you.
Thank you so much for having me, Nicole.
Hey, thanks for tuning in to the Let's Be Real podcast. If you have a question for the show, you can send it to me at Nicole@NicoleEunice.com. And hey, if you're enjoying this, we'd love for you to like, subscribe, share it with your friends, pass it on, shout it from the rooftops, whatever you feel like doing, because the reality is, let's get as many people getting real as possible. Talk to you soon.